She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. Thank you so much for joining us today. The show is sponsored by the Fairfax Company. And I have to say, once again, we've got an incredible show planned. We'll be discussing the National Resources Defense Council's annual beach report and the findings regarding the conditions of our country's beaches. And there are many, many moving parts to this, an unbelievable amount of data to be analyzed and put together to come out with the 2011 report, which came out at the end of June, I believe. And our first guest, I'm out of breath because it's going to be a really exciting show. I spoke to John Devine earlier. He is the senior attorney with the NRDC's water program, and he leads the Clean Water Solutions team. And anybody who's been listening to Mrs. Green's World ever knows that one of my number one priorities in the world that I believe we're facing is clean water. His focus, John's focus, is on implementing, defending, and strengthening Clean Water Act core program. And Ed Osan is going to be on next, senior policy analyst. What's wrong with me today? I better just slow down my excitement. I'm sorry, John. How you doing? I really don't have marble mouth. Senior policy analyst for NRDC from Santa Monica, and he'll be talking us, kind of bringing it down to earth, what we can do as homeowners and as consumers to make sure that we are doing our part for clean water. Please remember to join me every Saturday live at noon Pacific Standard Time at MrsGreensWorld.com, and remind you that you can listen on your iPhone or Droid, and lots of people do, and that the podcasts from the shows are on my website. And follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest. I'm doing quite a bit of blogging these days. So, John, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
John, I don't hear you.
Thank you for having me. I'm on.
Okay, here you are. I can hear you now. Sorry. Okay. This is like, take a deep breath, Mrs. Green. Part of this is, to me, the magnitude of the issue. And when I do the research, it's very telling to me about the challenges we face in terms of our oceans. So it's really fitting to have someone like you come on and give us a lot of data, analysis, the facts about what's going on. So you have mountains of it. And why don't we start, can you just give us like the Reader's Digest version of the mission of the NRDC? I think that would be a great start.
Sure. And thanks again for having me on. NRDC is a national environmental advocacy group. We are a full-service environmental organization. We work on the gamut of environmental issues, from climate change to nuclear policy to public health and toxic chemicals and air pollution. And what I do is work on water pollution, primarily focused on surface water in the United States.
You know, the report really is massive, but I loved what you said on the blog that you wrote about it and about why we need runoff protection. I've been doing some shows with the local Clean Water Starts With Me campaign. As you probably know, we have major monsoon activity in the Southwest, and it just it creates unbelievable amounts of damage once the, you know, the rains start, because it's a whole bunch of water in a very short time. But what I loved about your blog is that despite the data and all the information, the findings really are easy to describe. So can you talk a little bit about the findings? And
Absolutely. So every year for the last 22 years, NRDC has compiled information about the coastal and Great Lakes beaches around the country, so 30 states worth of information. And what we report are a couple of key pieces of information for roughly 3,000 beaches around the country. We look at both closings and advisories that are posted about beaches when local public health officials essentially decide that either they need to close a beach to swimming or warn people about pathogens like viruses and bacteria in the water that make it riskier to swim. The other thing we focus on in our report is actual monitoring data collected at the beach by, again, usually local public health officials, and the number of samples that are worse than relevant public health standards. And what we found at a 100,000-foot level last year, we look at the previous year's information. So for 2011, the nation experienced 23,481 closing and advisory days.
Wow.
Which in our 22 years of doing this report was the third highest level that we've seen. About 8% of the water samples taken at coastal and Great Lakes beaches were worse than the relevant recommended national standard from the EPA.
Okay, so let me just ask. Okay,
go ahead.
I just want to ask you this. When you say the third highest, does that mean, and I really want to finish your sentence, but does that mean that there, if it came up next year, that it was like the third highest or, again, fourth highest? Is there any trend to give us hope? It wasn't the highest, you know what I mean, from the 100,000 foot level, is there? I always love to know where it's trending. Are people getting more aware? Are people getting mm-hmm. more involved? So,
mm-hmm. well, there's to me the most salient statistic is that percentile of samples, you know, actual water quality. That are worse than relevant standards. And that was, like I said, about 8% of the samples last year were worse than the relevant standard. Same was true the year before that, and for several years before that, it was about 7%. So we're really, we've as best we can tell, plateaued in terms of our water quality at the beaches.
At this point.
And to us, that suggests a real need for national policy improvements that will, you know, pardon the pun, lift all boats and improve water quality nationwide.
So I'd like to know what causes the pollution. And I want to ask you this before I forget. I grew up on the Jersey Shore, loved it. It's one of the happiest memories I have of being a kid. And we'd go to the beach once in a while, John, and there'd be, we couldn't swim because they called it the red tide. I just remember that. What was the red tide?
Red tide is a common term used for certain kinds of algae outbreaks, which can be toxic to people and animals. And you'll often see them in association with the same kind of pollution that our report is focused on. Our report looks primarily at bacterial contamination. When beach managers go out to sample the beaches, they're looking for particular strains of bacteria which indicate the presence of human or animal waste in the water. And that's exactly what your listeners might think it is. And the kinds of bad things in human and animal waste, viruses, bacteria, other pathogens, can make people sick. The most common thing that people experience, is gastrointestinal sickness, like a stomach flu, But it also can cause things like respiratory infection and skin and ear infections, and much more serious things as well, like hepatitis or other things like that. Especially vulnerable are the elderly or people with compromised immune systems.
Systems, of which there are a growing number. Yeah, I mean, everybody I know has.
And then on top of that, there are kids who are swimming more often, submerging their heads.
Right.
And if my kids are any indication, more often gulping the water in the process.
They've got the mouthfuls of water. I mean, seriously, I remember as a kid, we just absolutely could not stay out of the water. And now, as adults, we go in the water to get wet and cool off. I mean, it's a very different thing. There's not a lot of playing at 61 in a pool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
John, literally, I would love to literally know, when you talk about toxic levels of human and animal waste in the water, tell me about the runoff. Take me upstream.
Sure.
To what happens, because honestly, with all of the research I've done in the past 4 years in my role as Mrs. Green, that shocked me that was such a huge contaminant. And I don't know why, because I thought I knew more than that.
Well, it's a great question, because it's one of the key pollution concerns nationwide these days. And so, just to talk a little bit about it, urban and suburban runoff is a huge pollution concern in a couple of key ways that affect beach water quality. First, when it rains, the rainfall hits hard surfaces in urban and suburban areas,
right?
Driveways, roadways, parking lots, rooftops, and it runs off in a way that, under natural conditions, it wouldn't. It would either soak into the soil or evaporate by and large, but impervious areas create stormwater runoff, and as it runs off the landscape, it picks up what's in its way: trash, animal waste, whether it's pet waste or wild animals, toxins like from roadways, things like
oil from the car and gasoline and
stuff from that leaks out of cars. And also chemicals applied on yards and other places, like pesticides or fertilizers, and together those things wash into storm sewer systems, which don't typically treat the water. They just direct it out to our waterways and beaches, and so that's a big source of the bacteria and pathogens that we're looking for when there's monitoring at the beach. Another big source that's also related to stormwater is sewage overflows. Our sewage from people's homes and businesses are in places where it's carried in separate sewer systems,
right.
those can leak and contaminate the storm sewer systems and get carried out to the water by those storm sewers. In addition, in about 700 cities around the country, those cities have what are known as combined sewer systems. The sewage and stormwater are carried in the same pipes, and when there's a significant enough rainfall, that overwhelms the treatment system and is designed to overflow directly into water bodies. And what that means is you get a mix of rainwater and raw sewage flowing into a water body, and that has obviously human waste in it. And so those are the those are the ways that that rainfall, which you ordinarily think of as clean and beneficial, can become pollution.
You know, I'd really like to talk about, you know, some of the things that you wrote about, which intrigue me, and I know quite a bit about it. One of our sponsors is a company called the Environmental Development Group, and they go all over the country building green infrastructure for companies, have huge contracts with organizations like Walmart to address this very problem, to address the stormwater and the runoff and the pollution and those kind of things. But let me ask you this. You mentioned in one of the things I read that you've written that there are actually beaches that you want to take your kids to, and you've targeted those. So is it for the mainstream person, and I haven't lived at the Jersey Shore for over, you know, 40 years, mm-hmm. Are the concentrations just naturally higher where there are large urban populations and that's where the runoff occurs, so you're going to go to a more remote area because it's not as polluted? How does that work, John? Because it's like I see it as it's the water, it's the oceans, and there's no...
It's a terrific question, and it is not the case that all urban beaches are... highly contaminated. That's one of the reasons we've focused so much on the solutions that a lot of beach managers and communities with beaches have used to address their stormwater and try to infiltrate it or evaporate it before it gets into the concrete systems. But just to talk very briefly about, you know, kind of why we might have the variety of things that you'll see at different beaches. We have in our database the data from last year of over 3,000 beaches along the coast and Great Lakes. And those and the sampling results from them. What you'll see, and you can see that, I should mention, at nrdc.org, and it's now for the first time this year a map function that allows you to enter your zip code or city and state where you are or want to go and see nearby beaches. And there is a real variety from beach to beach, and that can be caused by a number of different factors. One thing is simple geography. Areas that tend to be more sheltered don't flush out, if you will, as
right.
quick.
Makes sense.
So that can cause bacteria levels to be higher.
Right.
Obviously, those areas that have sources of pollution can experience higher pollution levels. You know, if you see an outfall from the storm sewer system, that's commonly a source of pollution. And then the other thing that might influence the percentage of samples that a individual beach might have that are worse than the standards are actually the practices that are used to do the sampling. There are some states and localities that are very proactive and in my view, really taking precaution to make sure that that beachgoers are safe by doing things like testing near pollution sources or testing right after a big rainfall, and those kinds of things are more likely to find exceedances of the standard because they're, you know, kind of looking for problems, if you will.
And then they can implement things to, like, the green infrastructures and start more in a prevention mode to
Absolutely.
Correct what's going on. Okay, I just want to tell you, because I do this all the time, I get so wrapped up and I'm getting the 1-minute signal.
So if you can stay on the line, that would be great. And I have a couple of more really important questions that we've got to cover. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. We are having an unbelievably great interview with John Devine, who is a senior attorney with the National Resources Defense Council Water Program, and he leads the Clean Water Solutions team. So come back and stay here with us. We're going to talk about some of those solutions. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World. Stay here with me. We'll be right back.
In the mid-Tucson summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees. But deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green with some great news about the all-new 2012 VW Passat. It's 2012 Motor Trend Car of the Year, best in class for legroom, and has standard Bluetooth technology. VW thought of everything by giving the Passat a brand new sleek design that conveys confidence and assertiveness. If you're looking for the best ownership experience possible and a great new Passat, visit Chapman Tucson at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill. But I have a bigger reason to give. A while back, I lost my job and I couldn't even support my family. A lot of people don't know Goodwill can help you find a job, but that's what they did for me. I've had this job for 7 years and I love going to work. You know how they say Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill needs your donations now more than ever. Please donate today.
Habitat for Humanity's Habit Store is changing the world. By selling new and used building and home improvement materials to the public, the Habit Store is diverting more than 250 tons from the landfill each year. To donate, call 520-889-7200. Stop by and shop today. The Habit Store is located at 935 West Grant Road. Proceeds from all the sales go to Habitat for Humanity Tucson. For more information, go to habitattucson.org or call 520-889-7200.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. We are having an unbelievably great interview with John Devine, who is a senior attorney with the National Resources Defense Council Water Program. He leads the Clean Water Solutions team. And we're talking about the beach report, their annual beach report, which surprisingly to me, they've been doing for 22 years. He's talking about the findings for the 2011, the actual data from what they collected in the water samples, the number of beach closings. It's an extremely comprehensive report. So, John, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. Before I forget, because I get so absolutely enthralled with the conversation, give a shout out again for the website for NRDC where people can actually go online and view the map and see where they're living, where they're going on vacation. They can actually put in a zip code. So can you tell the site for that?
Sure, please. It's www.nrdc.org/beaches, and like you said, Gina, we can enter the a zip code or an address and see beaches near you and how they fared last year.
And I wanted to ask you a question also. You said that when the storms come, that's one of the big problems. When there's a lot of rain and there's overflow and there's wastewater treatment plants that leak and it gets into our oceans. When you're in the desert Southwest, and I know that your area expertise is the beaches, but when I had people on from the stormwater facilities here in Pima County, when it goes out onto the land, we've got a lot of desert surrounding us, as you well know. Does literally the earth, the soil, become more of a natural filter? Does some of the contaminants evaporate? What happens, and is that a better solution? Because our stormwater, it goes right out into the desert, and whatever is in it, there it goes.
So it is the case that it's better to use natural infiltration and evaporation to deal with stormwater pollution than simply to shunt it into concrete systems and out to our waterways. We call that suite of solutions green infrastructure, but what that means is things like porous pavement or green roofs, roadside plantings and rain gardens that mimic Mother Nature on the landscape in urban and suburban areas. And by absorbing stormwater close to where it falls or letting it evaporate or reusing it, what that does is it prevents stormwater from becoming polluted water. And that's to the good for our waterways.
So can you give us a couple of examples of like the green infrastructure, paint a picture for us, but what some communities and leaders are doing to get more of a proactive prevention mode?
Sure. We have, and easily findable from our website, a report that we did last year called Rooftops to Rivers that profiles 20 cities around the country and what they've done to invest in green infrastructure. To take one example, Philadelphia has a long-term problem with these combined sewer overflows. Has a combined sewer system that, in a significant enough rain, dumps both rainwater and sewage into area waterways. And as a part of addressing that pollution problem, the city has committed to incredible investment in green infrastructure. They intend to green a third of the impervious area in Philadelphia, which will have incredible water quality benefits, but importantly, also adds benefits for livability and other things that our conventional stormwater management systems don't. So by using vegetation to filter and absorb rainwater, you get growing vegetation that purifies the air. You get green space that raises nearby property values. A host of other benefits that you wouldn't get if you were just building a big underground storage tunnel to deal with that store.
I mean, it really impacts quality of life, and it's not like Philadelphia has a lot of beachfront property. So it's like this is a really systemic change for the quality of life that people live in this big city.
Yeah, it's going to, the kinds of before and planned for after pictures that you see of Philadelphia are stunning. And we're hopeful that Philadelphia and the several cities that we've profiled won't be islands of green around the country, but rather will be the mainstream. And right. the way that that can happen is through national pollution control requirements. The Environmental Protection Agency is actually on the cusp of really taking this on. EPA has initiated a rulemaking action to improve the national requirements for sources of urban and suburban runoff. And if they do it right, which they're in the like I said, they're just starting, and we'll see a proposed rule in the coming year. That will require sources of stormwater to retain on site a certain percentage of the average of certain kinds of storms. You know, the way it's you often see it is retain the runoff from the 90th percentile storm, for instance. And if they do that, you'll get communities around the country investing in these green infrastructure solutions on a site by site basis, and it really will transform urban and suburban life.
You know, I read a blog today by someone that I really love. Her name's Jackie Ottman, and she's in some circles considered a green marketing guru. And she talks about the role of the consumer and that consumers can massively impact anything they decide to. I've certainly seen it in all of the petitions that go around every day to tell Congress and to stop this and to write this. This is going to sound like an out-of-the-box question, but stay with me. Who cares? Like, who really cares about the clean beaches? Do our national leaders care? Does the EPA care? Are people who live in the beach communities the impetus behind activating the clean water matrix? Is it an environmental issue? Who's leading the charge? Because it is so massive. When you talk to me about the magnitude and scope, who are the thought leaders in making change happen, John?
It's many of those folks. Beaches, rivers, and lakes, they're the top vacation destination in the United
States.
Totally. Americans make more than 900 million trips to coastal areas annually, spending about $44 billion during those trips. So this is not
an
environmental, environmentalist.
Saving the trees, yeah.
Right. These are coastal tourism businesses, recreational fishing and swimming and beach going is a big old deal. We cite studies in our report of estimates that a typical swimming day is worth about $35 to each individual. And so when you talk about the number of people who go to the nation's beaches, if pollution is severe enough that you have to close a beach or warn people against swimming, that's an economic loss to the country. And so our nation has numerous people who are committed to and dependent on clean beaches. And so that's why it's imperative that our leaders in Washington adopt policies that help protect beach water quality. The one we just talked about on improving stormwater controls is one, and that's something that EPA has begun and is on the right track with respect to. On the flip side, EPA also is responsible for setting health standards for recreational waters, and there the agency has not done a great job. The agency is presently revising its water quality criteria for recreational waters, and they're supposed to be designed to protect swimmers from getting sick. Unfortunately, the agency needs to strengthen those standards, which, at least as proposed, would make it acceptable for 1 in 28 swimmers to become ill with gastrointestinal illness.
You've got to be kidding me. I know that you wouldn't make that up as the senior attorney for the NRDC, that's going to be okay. 1 in 28. That's what they're advocating for.
That's their proposed standard, which they are still reviewing, and there are still opportunities to get involved and change that. Would, based on their estimates of swimmer risk, if people were to swim in water just meeting that standard, it would result in a 1 in 28 risk of gastrointestinal illness. That also doesn't fully account for other health risks like skin and skin rashes, ear infections, eye infections. So EPA really does need to strengthen those standards. On our beach report website, which again is nrdc.org/beaches, there are places where you can take action and your listeners can take action and let EPA know that those standards are important and need to be strengthened.
And I have a question. We're going to call Ed in a minute, but I have a question for you, John Devine. Sometimes when you're in the thick of the analysis and the publication and the findings, and you've got kids, what's your in the core of your being? It's not really a woo-woo question. It's a very scientific question. What do you see as the vision? Do you see people getting more conscious? Do you see more activism? Are people really getting that massive consumerism is now taking its toll, population concentrations? Do you have lots of hope, or do you have to work at it? What's the John Devine story?
I have a lot of hope. Amongst my family, because of this work, a lot of folks are more conscious about their decisions before they go to the beach. We look up our report online,
yeah.
and we see how a given beach did. My kids just last week were visiting their grandmother in New York and went to beaches with her, and we pulled it out and looked it up online. So I think it's a terrific tool that we've got online this year that gives folks, kind of a historical perspective of the whole year last year. What people also can do is go to most beaches are monitored by local public health officials who then will often have websites devoted to the most recent data taken at the beach, and that can give you a much more real-time sense of the information, and then people really can also get involved with their local beaches. Let people know, let the beach managers know that they want them monitored regularly, that they want to participate in pushing for the cleanup of pollution sources near the beach.
And kind of as with all successful change, it's a group effort. It's the national leaders, it's the local leaders, it's the business community. I think we have to underscore that. It's a huge industry in our country. So there's something in it for everyone, starting with the healthiest child, which to me is a place I'd like to go. And I'm so hopeful about things that I have this dream that someday something like this, when we start tweeting about it, we'll crash Twitter because so many people will get it instead of Justin Bieber. It's like, why don't we have somebody talk about the beach report and create a Twitter buzz? And I know NRDC does a lot to get the word out. So we have about 1 minute left. What's the call to action? If listeners are inspired, which many of my listeners are, what's the one call to action when they stop listening to the show, get online, go to NRDC and sign the petition for the EPA or put their comments for that? What's your call to action?
Absolutely. Yeah. Go to nrdc.org/beaches. Look for the take action function and let EPA know that strong swimming standards, at our nation's beaches are important and necessary.
And they really affect all of us. I mean, it's just absolutely. Like I said to you, there are so many people from Tucson and Phoenix. They just, you cannot, you know, put your sweatshirt on without somebody offering to help you in San Diego from Tucson. Oh, how you doing? Because we migrate. It's really hot here. So thank you for taking the time. We're going to call Ed O'San, who's a senior policy analyst. You've been a great guest, and thanks for all you do. Spread the word back there to NRDC that Mrs. Green's team's doing everything they can to spread the word.
Absolutely. Thank you very
much. Okay, please stay here with me. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Ed O'San up next.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. Did you know that the 2012 VW Beetle has been completely redesigned, that it has exciting new features, look, and performance, and that it is one of Oprah's best things for 2012? The best news is Chapman VW has them in stock. Check out the new Beetle at Chapman VW at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan, or visit them at TucsonVW.com. Be sure to tell them that Mrs. Green sent you.
What if you had simple and easy solutions to live, work, and play green? Green Living Magazine, the premier green lifestyle magazine, brings you the latest in organic cooking, gardening, health and wellness, chef and celebrity interviews, as well as easy solutions to clean up your everyday life. Visit greenlivingaz.com for the latest in green news. Buy your subscription and view our network videos. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, and again at greenlivingaz.com.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program. Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. We are certainly giving all of us a lot to think about today. Our first guest was John Devine, who's a senior attorney with the National Resources Defense Council Water Program. And joining us now is Ed O'San, who's a senior policy analyst for NRDC, who's going to talk to us about some practical things we can do as consumers to be what I call water smart, water wise. And Ed, thank you for being with us today. And I just want to ask for one more minute of your patience, because there's a couple of, you know, I listen to NPR a lot, and it's like even NPR has to do this. I mean, it's a sponsor supported show, and I have to do a shout out for one of our sponsors. It's a new sponsor. We're thrilled. It's a company based in New York City. And I kind of love that it's today, because the company is called EcoBella with 2 C's. And the woman who owns it is really a pioneer in the natural beauty field, which matters to me. She has a company that provides organic materials for the products. They're fair trade sourced. They're cruelty free. And I am just proud to have them as our partners. I'm trying some of their products. And the thing to me where it fits in, she took using water out of a lot of the EcoBella products and replaced it with aloe. She was a great guest a couple of weeks ago, and she felt that it's really important to treat farmers ethically, to appreciate the whole business model, and to really make sure that they are being good stewards of the planet. So, you know, Ed, I know you've got a great sense of humor, because I have to read a part of your bio, and
oh, really?
I wrote a blog that
because I have a really sick sense of humor. And I wrote a blog on Ecobella called Green Smell Be Gone for bathroom use. And it's an essential oil because I don't want to spray chemicals in my air in my house anymore. So it's a real nice citrus smell. So there's my shout out for Ecobella. And now we will make it all about you. And I pinky swear that we'll have you back on the show. What you said on your bio really made me laugh, because you talked about that you used to be, and I don't have the exact quote, but that used to be, you're a good gardener, you're an angler, which I know is fishing, because I think that might be what my brother is, and then a mediocre golfer, so that made me laugh, and then you put hunting, tennis, I do have it, and water skiing are more memory than reality. Maybe next weekend I'll get back to one of them. And I thought, I can so relate to this guy. Yeah, skiing, not so much. So let's make it all about you, and what is your role as a senior policy analyst for NRDC?
Well, I head up a team that works on water conservation and water use efficiency. And we work on practices, methods, technologies, and policies that will help save water in the interest of protecting the environment and helping consumers to save money. So you have, I'm sure many of your users, or your listeners, excuse me, are already practice pretty good water conservation measures around the home and so on. I'm sure a few people would, look at a dripping faucet and not, eventually give it some attention that it needs.
Right.
But there are a lot of things that take place that you may not be able to see, or you may not be able to process, that they're really adding up to a lot of water waste. One of them, you mentioned the bathroom. We'll go back into the bathroom here.
I love to talk about guilt-free flushing too.
Yeah, I mean, most people have a tank type toilet in their bathroom, and over time there's potential for toilets to leak. Not on the floor, you'd notice that right away, but down the drain internally, and when the valve that opens when you flush it doesn't seat properly when it closes, it can actually waste a lot of water. You may not. I think we're all familiar with the phenomenon of the quote running toilet unquote, where there's a hissing sound or a ripple that you see in the bowl or something like that. By the time you can actually hear it or see it, it could be that level of leakage could be running at between 100 and 200 gallons a day. So there's a long run-up period.
For one home?
Oh, yeah, for one toilet.
Okay.
For one toilet.
One toilet, all right.
And so you have a run-up to that as the valve is becoming progressively more, warped or distorted over time. So it's good periodically to do a pretty simple test of a dye tablet or a couple drops of food coloring into the tank, wait 10 or 15 minutes, and just see whether you have any coloration in the bowl.
Right,
if you do,
right.
You have a leak.
I've done that
and
little blue tablet, put it in and check it out. Okay.
Yeah, it makes sense to do that. The other thing that I would recommend for an existing householder is outdoors. We see this so often. We see sprinklers, irrigation that's going on the sidewalk, going on the driveway, or running out into the gutter. And you just have to say that that's just wasteful. And we all have a responsibility for our own. As homeowners, we have responsibility for our own property and our own yards and our own use of resources and our own stewardship of those resources. So maybe it happens a lot on your block, and maybe you think it's no big deal, but it's a source of waste that we really shouldn't countenance. So if you're handy and you want to tackle that, and your sprinkler heads need adjustment, then take care of it. If you're not, then get a lawn service in to take a look at it. But don't keep watering the sidewalk, watering the driveway, and running water down the gutter. You know, very large fraction of total household use is outdoor use. In Arizona and the Southwest, it's easily over half of residential use. And even in the Northeast, it can be a third of residential use during the summertime period can be outdoor use. So, you know, none of us as homeowners are really professional landscape managers, but yet we have this responsibility to maintain our property and to use resources wisely. We've got to give this the attention it needs.
Don't run water
down the gutter.
No kidding. And one of my expressions that almost sounds cliche is to know better is to do better. And when I was a kid, one of the most fun things would be spending a really long time washing the car using the hose. Well, mm-hmm. when you start educating Rita, as they say, there's, you know, talking to John and you and the stormwater people I've had on the show from our region, there's so many multiple implications, the ripple effect, because then that water goes down into the drains, which could then take my gasoline and oil that might have leaked and any other pollutants that are on there. So there's really, to me, it's all about let's start connecting the dots as consumers. And I think a lot of consumers want to. Can we go back
sure.
to toilets
and it's really
for a minute?
Easy, and it's okay. really easy just to wrap up on hoses, on the car washing. It's really easy to it's easier, I think, to wash a car using a trigger handled nozzle
right.
than
right.
it is an open hose. An open hose will run easily 5 gallons a minute, and the Jeez. Using a squeeze handle nozzle, you know, you're just using it when you're using it.
Right.
So it just makes a whole lot more sense to take that extra step, screw in the handle, and then do what you need to do.
And it's easier to get the person who's helping you wash the car, too, with you have a spray gun,
yeah.
see?
You can zap them.
I didn't forget that mm-hmm. part either.
Right.
But, you know, I've written many articles that people tease me about with my fixation with guilt-free flushing. But the one of the first guests I had when I started Mrs. Green's World, the numbers blow me away. And I just say to people, run the numbers. We changed out to high efficiency toilets in all of our bathrooms. And what mm-hmm. I say is that's because we could, and not everybody can, because it's an affordability factor. And we didn't get,
sure.
you know, Toto toilets. We got Niagara, and I think they were $99 or something. But there are do-it-yourself techniques to use less water every time you flush. And there are tons of them online. All you have to do is Google it. You can put things that are safe to create the space in your tank so that it's not filled up with water. So you don't have to go out and create landfill waste. I donated mine to the Habitat for Humanity's Habastore. They mm-hmm. didn't go in the landfill, of course. But mm-hmm. there are things that you can do, because everybody flushes the toilet. Everybody brushes their teeth. Everybody drinks water. So it's really,
yeah.
people might go to the car wash, but every day we are flushing, you know, drinking water down the drain. That's
right.
why I get so obsessed about toilets.
There are lots of aftermarket products for, you know, insertion into the tank and so on. And if you have an older model that really is a very large flusher, you can capture some savings from some of those products pretty inexpensively. But I think it's worth pointing out that at this stage, a high-efficiency toilet, if you shop around, you can get a WaterSense labeled toilet for pretty much the same amount that you would pay for a base model of a higher flush toilet. There really isn't a significant price premium at this point, excuse me, attached to water efficient plumbing products. You can get an efficient shower head, you can get an efficient faucet, you can get an efficient toilet, and you really don't have to pay up for the efficiency. Now, you can pay a lot of money for plumbing products.
You don't have to.
People do.
Right.
But you don't have to.
Right.
And what you're paying for, when you pay for $750 or $1,000 for a lavatory faucet set, you're paying for the finish, you're paying for the style, those kinds of things, rather than the fact that
right.
it also is carrying a WaterSense label. You can buy base model efficiency without having to pay a premium.
What about things like washing machines? Is there?
I'm glad you mentioned that.
I do, because I think it made your water use.
Yes, it's washing clothes on average for single family homes. Excuse me. Is still about 20% of indoor water use. So it is a big fraction. It's a big contributor to your bill. And today's clothes washers, particularly today's Energy Star labeled clothes washers, are dramatically more efficient, both energy efficient and water efficient, than the clothes washers that are installed in most homes today. If you have a traditional top-loading washer with a center agitator that is 8 or 10 years old, it really would pay you to consider replacing, even if it's still working, it would pay you to consider replacing it with an Energy Star model. I mean, the products that are meeting Energy Star for clothes washers, if you have a top loader, you're probably now using less than 20 gallons of load. And that would compare with about 40 gallons of load for the traditional top loader with a center agitator. So you can virtually cut your water use for laundering in half, even in the top load format. If you go to a front loader that's Energy Star labeled, you'd be using less than 15 gallons of load for an average sized unit. So it really does make sense. And, of course, when you save the water, you're saving the warm or the hot water that you may use on some of your cycles, and that, you know, will save on your energy bill. And if you have electric hot water particularly, this is just about a no-brainer.
And I am not a senior policy analyst for the NRDC, nor am I a scientist, so much for that disclaimer. But I have done a lot of research. My mom was a wash your clothes in cold water because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't kill germs. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm 61, so we're talking a long time ago. And from the research I've done, why would anyone wash their clothes in hot water? I really don't get it. It doesn't help. And it's an added expense to you. It's a massive energy use. Correct me if I'm wrong, because, hey, it's all about the truth and authenticity on Mrs. Green's World Network.
Yeah, the manufacturers, both of the clothes washers and the detergent manufacturers will tell you that washing in cold water is fine, and that some of the detergents are formulated for that. And when you think about it, you're not really killing germs when you wash your clothes.
No, you're not
in
boiling them.
Warm water or hot. Yeah, you're not sterilizing
right.
your clothes. What happens is that the detergent is an agent that allows the dirt and the soil and the oils and so on to be lifted and removed from the fabric when the clothes are agitating in the washer. So you're detaching soils and so on from your clothes, but you're not sterilizing them. So if that's what people are thinking, if that's the tradition for warm or hot water, then, you know, I think that it could stand another look.
Yeah, here's
but
a great
right.
opportunity
I mean,
to
use
re-educate
much less energy
yourself.
Using, yeah, you'd much less energy with cold water wash.
And we all have to be mindful of it. You know, I will be in touch, or my assistant will be in touch with the NRDC about getting you back on the show, because this did not do justice to all of the work that you're doing. And the consumer wants to hear more practical solutions. So when the schedule permits, I'd love to have you back on and have you be the show, because I think that would be great. I think we could have a lot of fun and be
I'll leave you with two words. Pool covers.
Oh,
we can talk about that next time.
We'll talk about that, and then we can talk about like getting rid of your pool, because I'd like to talk about that. That's what we did. So thank you so much for being with
sure.
us. I want to give
Glad
a shout to. Out again to the NRDC website. It's nrdc.org, and there is just so much content on that website. It's an easy to navigate website. Thank you, Ed. for being on the show. Ed Osan, Senior Policy Analyst for the NRDC. You'll be back. I know you will.
Okay.
Thank you for being a part
Great.
Of Mrs. Green's World. Follow
sure.
me on Facebook, Twitter. I'll be putting information out about this. And here's to crashing Twitter about the environment. Make it a great green week.